Welcome one and all to the Stock Up Podcast, your one-stop shop for stocking up on the information you need to qualify for the Pro Tour. My name is Alex. I'm joined today, as always, by one Jacob Negro. Jacob, you were sick. Have you gotten better?
Yeah, I'm better now.
Okay. Sound maybe a tad of congestion as you hear.
Yeah, you got me.
That's okay. Well, I'm glad you're better. Today, we have all sorts of things to talk about. We probably won't even be able to cover everything we want to talk about. Mostly just standard. We've got a rotation. We've got a new set. And this is going to be our standard brainstorming episode. Maybe next week we'll come to you with a little bit more solidified ideas. But for now, we're just going to bounce some ideas around between the two of us, and you guys can all listen. So before we get started, I want to remind everyone that you can follow us over on patreon.com/stockuppodcast. For $1 a month, you get access to all of our exclusive content. You could also watch us on YouTube, follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Okay, so first thoughts on the standard, Jacob. What do you think?
Well, so there's kind of two things to talk about. There's what people have been playing in the week that the ban, since the bans have happening, and what we kind of think Avatar is going to change about that. It seems like Demir is very clearly the most played deck to me, looking at some random challenges. Which makes sense. People really like that deck. It's all, I don't know, the kind of like flash creature, disruptive, draw extra cards type deck is always like a go-to for your average Magic player, I'd say.
Yeah. So I built a version of this deck. I'm going to put it on the screen just to kind of see like what all new cards I could put in it. And I didn't find a ton, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So this is what I've got. Basically, I only found Heartless Act, and then maybe some sideboard options. My Scornful Striker seems somewhat decent. Wan Shi Tong, maybe the Unagi, maybe just big
card advantage sideboard cards. Yeah, if you didn't make the mana work, Wan Shi Tong is pretty interesting to me.
Yeah, blue-blue is a little tough for the mana at the moment. That's why I didn't put it in the main deck.
Yeah, it's like the joke with it, not that people are shuffling their library or searching them in standard very much, but just that you could flash it in on turn two if you wanted Ninjutsu Kaido.
Right.
And then that's kind of great because it's back in your hand, and I think more so it's just kind of a top-end thing you want to play. I mean, yeah, it's weird because you'd want to warp your mana forward a little bit, but maybe these decks will just start playing one copy. You know, it is legendary. You don't want to have your hand clogged with them. But, you know, even if you don't warp your mana around it, it's also, like, still going to be true that you'll be able to cast it on turn two a lot of games if you need to. Just not reliably.
You know, so this was a stock mana base, and let me see. It's got 4, 8, 12, 17 blue. I mean, that's not terrible.
Yeah, it's like the type of thing where, like, it's only one thing. It's only in a specific sequence if you don't have something better to do, you know? So even though, like, in reality, you probably don't have blue-blue on turn two, probably, I'm going to guess, around 40% of your games or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need it in that many games to all come together that way, you know?
Right. I've got this Ty Lee Chi blocker, which is probably not a card that a lot of people have talked about. This is 2 and a blue, 2/1. It's got flash and prowess, and when it enters, you tap target creature, and it doesn't untap for as long as you control it. So I don't know if that's actually a good card, but I thought it could be interesting to try.
Yeah, certainly just, you know, costing a whole mana more than Flood Pits Drowner.
That's true. It does, it keeps it locked down.
Yeah, but also sometimes that could be, I mean, I guess it's always going to, like, tap it for combat, but you know, it can be a downside too. You could flash this in and your opponent could kill it, and even though that thing got tapped that turn, it's not going to be stunned the next turn.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Just, I think it's a card I would try in a game or two to see if it was any decent. That's why I put it in. What do you think of, you think this blue-black deck's going to be very good? After toying around and looking at all the other options, I don't know that it is.
Yeah, I'm not a big believer in the blue-black deck. I'm not a huge believer in the card Deep Cavern Bat. That's not entirely true, but I think in order for that card to be good, it's its power better be growing, and this deck does not do that.
Gotcha.
Just because I think it's a little too slow of a clock, and you just play this game with, where it's like a house of cards, right? Where you like take something kind of valuable with it, and then like the game's just never gonna realistically end before they get that thing back, I think.
Yeah.
And not that it's like a terrible exchange for you or anything like that, but sometimes it kind of is. Like, it's just like your opponent has like a million turns to kill this thing for one mana, and then like eventually it gets killed for one mana, and they're still happy that they, that like exchange happened for them.
When I was looking at blue black stock list, basically all of them had it. Maybe it's just like a ninjutsu thing mostly.
Yeah. You know, like, yeah, I don't know. I wonder if a zero beast binder would be better, I guess. That one also is a lot better if you can grow its power, for sure. But, you know, that's a kind of a tool the green-blue deck is using right now, which this green-blue creature deck seems like it would be pretty good against Dimir to me. Like, really good, I guess, because I've played, you know, this Dimir deck, I feel like, for such a long time now. I mean, it was a deck before Kaido even, people played a deck that looked kind of like this. With just Gix, and that deck just sucks at blocking. That's like the simplest way to put it. Like, if your opponent is playing creatures and trying to turn them sideways, it's a bad matchup. And this green-blue deck is just 34 creatures and 4 Innkeeper's Talents and 22 lands.
Yeah, I think we talked about this deck a little bit last week, if I'm remembering correctly. I found a list again for, you know, for what it's worth.
Yeah, I saw there's been a few challenges. I saw one list won a challenge in a field of Dimir. I see another challenge Dimir won with, you know, like 5 Dimir decks in the top 8. I do not think that'll be a true representation of what standard is going to look like. I know, I guess if you just look at it one weekend, it looks kind of nightmarish with the amount of Dimir there is. Mm-hmm. But, you know, these Magic Online players are just looking to play something without thinking too hard about what the best deck can be, and I think the Dimir deck is just kind of right there and ready to go.
Right. The same sort of with this Simic deck. I mean, basically, this is just what all 1 and 2s top out of Ouroboroid. It's got the Jackal Genius Genesis. Do you think this card will adopt Badgermole as a powerful card?
Yeah, well, so this list is actually quite different than what I'm used to be honest. But the Badgermole is interesting in this type of deck because they already have a lot of 2s, and they're all blue, which, like, doesn't mean you can go, like... I mean, I guess you can still go Cub on a land plus another 2-drop. And going wide is certainly valuable for Ouroboroid, and having lots of bodies is valuable for Innkeeper's Talent, but it's, like, I guess ideally, and this is what I'd mentioned last week on our top 10... If there was like a green-white go-wide deck that kind of rewarded you more thoroughly for going wide, that's where I think the Cub would come into play. But then I kind of remember we don't have Temple Garden yet, which is like a huge deal for that type of deck.
It is tough, yeah. I mean, we do have Passage and Willowrush Verge and Starting Town, so you could do that. It's just, obviously, that's still not Temple Garden.
Yeah. It's also like you might as well play 3 colors if you're going to play all these.
If you have all these tri-lands, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the... That's not really true of Multiversal Passage, I guess. You kind of want to not spread it too thin, but...
Right.
Yeah, the Jackal thing's pretty sweet. There's a trick with that deck I haven't seen people do yet, where... So, Druneth or Jackal, depending on whether you're playing in paper or online, is a green and blue for a 1/1 trample, legendary creature, and it says, whenever you cast a creature spell with mana value equal to its power... Sorry, Druneth's power. Copy that spell, except the copy isn't legendary. Then put a +1/+1 counter on Druneth. So this is kind of this, I guess, like new world of how triggers work, where there used to be a lot of intervening if type stuff in Magic triggers, and I feel like for the most part, a lot of those have gone away, and they've found better ways to word cards. And I guess the point I'm getting to is that if you have a 2-power Druneth or Jackal, and you cast a 2-drop, you can flash in Floodpit's Drowner in response to the trigger and copy that as well. So you can end up like double copying a 2-drop.
Yeah, kind of those one of those wild, unintuitive things that you just have to remember that you can do. Yeah, so I'm assuming this list I found have on the screen now is this more similar to what your how the deck has evolved? It's got engaged talent.
Exactly. It's just a pure creature deck that uses blue mostly because that's how you can get interaction out of your creatures in standard right now. Which I guess is kind of my concern with going a different direction is like the Beastbinder and Floodpits Drowner and Tashana's Tidebinder even, you know, those are kind of key elements I think this deck has available to itself. Otherwise, it's just kind of completely vulnerable to whatever its opponent's trying to do.
Right. So one of the problems of playing a green-white deck, say, even if you had Temple Garden, is a lot of the, not as many of the creatures at the moment anyways interact. So you'd have to play, I don't know, Get Lost or Seam Rips or something, which dilutes your creature count.
Yeah, and Get Lost kind of sucks.
And Get Lost kind of sucks. Yeah, so none of these decks, these are mostly established decks that don't have any of the, or maybe you add one or two new cards yet. Is there anything that looks particularly promising that you've seen or thought of with built around the new cards?
Yeah, so I watched some Jim Davis videos and Ash Lizzle. They both are YouTube content creators that played the streamer event and they chose to spend that day playing standard. And they had a lot of brews. Ash Lizzle had one that was using, sorry, I linked them to you, the two black green guy, Beifong's Bounty Hunter. So this is two black green for a 4/4 creature human mercenary. And whenever a non-land creature you control dies, Earthbound X, where X is that creature's power. So notably, it doesn't say another, just when you are evaluating this card, even for draft, it's amazing. So if this just dies, you'll make a 4/4 for one of your lands. But her deck was using kind of a combo of this card and Umbral Caller Zealot, or I guess any Sack Outlet and Bloodghast, which by itself, that's still not a win. But basically, you can sack Bloodghast to Earthbend 2. You can sack your Earthbended land to have your land just go to your graveyard and come back to play tapped, which will return any Bloodghast in your graveyard. So that's like infinite sack loops, and there's like multiple ways to win from there. And I know that sounds like a lot of like things you need, but one of the kind of win cons you can play is Scavenger's Talent, which I guess in like, if you've seen the Cat Oven Pioneer decks, they've played this card, which is like really just a really strong card for bringing this type of combo together because Scavenger's Talent, as you level it, like the second level gives you, whenever you sack a permanent, target player mills two cards, which you use to mill yourself until you have your infinite combo and you just mill your opponent. And the final level gives you an end step trigger that lets you sack three things to reanimate something. It would point it, like, so if you like assemble whichever half of the combo you're missing, the Sack Outlet or the Bounty Hunter, you can then just win on your end step that way. And if you don't have Scavenger's Talent and assemble this combo, she was also including some Festering Gulches, which are the black-green tap desert that when it enters pings. Which, you know, it is a black-green tap land, which isn't perfect, but if that happens to be a land you control while doing this combo, you can just Earthbend that over and over and sack it, and it comes back and pings to your opponent.
Yeah, so I didn't notice this combo when I was reading through the spoiler for the first time, but it's actually pretty appealing because most of the pieces are just good cards.
Yeah, that's what's nice to me is like you don't have to play like a Blood Artist. I mean, I think you could play Sephiroth. You could make this a Sephiroth deck, and that's also a pretty good card.
Yeah, Sephiroth's a good card. You more just don't have to play any weird like combo piece. I'm thinking a lot of the time when combo isn't standard, you have a card like, you know, Felidar Guardian, which is a 4-mana 1/4 that you have to play. In this case, you know, Bloodghast and then Self-Mill are all pretty, you know, good cards. You can fit in all sorts of different kinds of creatures as your plan A or plan B to go along with the combo. This Beifong's Bounty Hunter's card is actually a pretty good rate. Especially once you consider that once it dies, itself,
yeah, if people are
it counts itself.
Interacting in a way that aren't like exiling or bouncing this, then it's kind of just pretty reasonable, definitely.
Yeah, and I mean, it is a four drop. This might be, you know, the worst part of the combo, so to speak. That other card, Scavenger's Talent, I've built decks with that before, and it certainly does something powerful. It is a little trinkety, I guess.
Yeah, that's fair.
The desert thing seems like an easy way to do it, though. Yeah.
No, just that, and like that, a combination of all those things, and maybe Sephiroth if you want. And you know, I like that you don't have to just play like a weird card that's only for the sake of winning.
Right. Sephiroth sounds good too. I should put this deck together. I like building decks with Sephiroth.
Yeah, I mean, Bloodghast and the Sephiroth is kind of decent, and also just Bloodghast with a bunch of self mill. You know, the Zealot surveilling is kind of relevant in that as you play out the game, you might surveil some Bloodghasts into your graveyard or stuff like that.
Yeah, totally. So earlier today, I threw together a couple decks. I had more. This week, I'm actually working some extra amounts. We had to record kind of early in the week. So I definitely have more ideas than time this week, but I put together a couple lists I thought we could have as a starting off point. So the first one is a blue-red Lessons deck.
Cool. Yeah, so I saw Jim Davis try a few Lessons decks.
What were his like?
So one of them was blue-red that looked kind of like this, though I think a pretty even higher density of Lessons, to be honest.
Okay.
But some of them were kind of bad. The Teemer one was kind of interesting to me. It had just like some of the Rampant Growth. So it was kind of a Rampant Control deck. And it also included the Teemer 6-drop Uncle Iroh, which is kind of Leer-like.
Right.
On your turn, it gives all your instants and sorceries in your graveyard flashback. And if they're Lessons, they're just cost one. Not quite if the same play pattern as Leer, which I'm sure is unfamiliar to a bunch of people because Leer's dominance in Standard was during COVID and basically online era only.
It's a while ago.
Yeah. Leer just gives all... So spells can't be countered and all instant sorceries in your graveyard are flashback. And the spells that can't be countered is supposed to be so that like you can't counter your opponent's spells when it's in play.
Yeah.
But they just played a bunch of Fading Hopes, which is an unsummon. And they would just play Leer with like an unsummon in their graveyard. So if they tried to kill it, you just bounce it. People also played Grixis and Splash Duress.
Yeah. So the trick with that, I'm assuming, is that since it's a 6-mana creature and it doesn't have any like protection, right?
No.
Yeah. So it's a 6-mana creature. I assume you have to ramp.
Yeah. He was just playing one and finding it a lot too. Is kind of the
okay.
thing.
Okay. I'm sure he had the ramp lesson. Yeah. If he's Teemer.
He likes playing this dragon that's kind of Broodmate dragon like. If you have Lessons or Dragons in your graveyard.
Okay. Is that card good? I thought about it putting it in this deck, but it didn't seem good enough.
I mean, you get a pair of 4/4s, and if you untap with it, they have Firebending too, and the ability of, like, you pay 4 mana to pump all your dragons +2/+0. So, like, it wasn't perfect. If it's like 1, 2, 3, 4 is... So if you attack with both, then they're both 6s, and then you activate again, they're both 8s. He, like, played a long control game, I remember, where he played it on turn 7 and then played his 8th land and attacked with both of them, and it was exactly 20 damage, which I thought was pretty cool.
Okay. Yeah. But, it's not bad.
You know, it doesn't perfectly work out every game like that, but...
So when I built this deck, you know, I thought the best lessons were Accumulate Wisdom. Combustion Technique's pretty nice. This one is the 1 in a red instant, deals 2 damage plus the amount of lessons you have in your graveyard, and it exiles. So that one's nice because it's a red burn spell that can do a ton of damage and also exile.
Yep, and Firebending Lesson, yep.
And then Firebending Lesson's like a shock, yeah, with Kicker.
Yeah, it's like Burst Lightning, yeah.
Oh yeah, Burst Lightning, but can only hit creatures. Boomerang Basics is another good lesson. That's one you had on your top 10 cards.
Yeah, I definitely think in this type of deck, I mean, it's cool that you're, like, kind of bundling it with a Prowess package and playing the Storm Chaser's Talent. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. So that's the lesson package. Not a ton, you know. I decided to go with Grand Grand to help loot. And also, you know, it's really powerful, obviously, if you can get 3 lessons in graveyard. It makes all your non-creature spells cost 1 less.
Yeah. I wonder if there's going to be any overlap. Because I have been seeing some people still playing kind of a blue-red Prowess deck. But the angle they're taking is to play Thundertrap Trainer, Quantum Riddler, and Splash Portal.
Did see that.
With nothing else to like Splash Portal, just those 8 things. That's
okay.
Yeah, I kind of wish there was more to hit, I guess.
Yeah, But there's really not, right? I don't know what else you would play.
Yeah, and it's worth noting, I guess, too, that when you splash portal Thunder Trap Trainer, not only do you re-get the ETB, you also draw a card. So that's pretty cool.
That is good, yeah. So the one thing I thought about Grand Grand is I wasn't sure how to tap it. I wasn't sure if just thinking I was going to attack with it would be good enough. So I threw in Subterranean Schooner in my deck, which, you know.
Yeah, that's a interesting one. Yeah, I don't know if any of the waterbending stuff is good, but.
Yeah, I looked at all that. It really didn't seem so.
Yeah. I've been really impressed with that card in Limited so far, because waterbending's pretty good in Limited, but.
Makes sense. The planet lands also in blue and red don't really work well, but I put one red one in.
Yeah, the red one is kind of wincon-like, I guess, later.
Yeah. Legend of Roku is a card I'm pretty excited about generally, and it fits okay in this deck, so I threw two in there. I was going to build some other decks with it, but I ran out of time. That's the two red-red Saga, exile the top three. You can play them. It adds a mana. We talked about it last week.
Yeah. Oh, you know, I see a standard challenge from today that has an Allies deck.
Oh, cool. I built an Allies deck.
Yeah, five color.
I'll jump to my Allies deck next, actually. this one, I just went with three color. You know, I thought this deck would be five color, but as I was building it, it felt like the Bant stuff was by far the best.
Yeah. No, this one has just a single black card, I think, just to say it's five color, and then it has the red four drop.
Mm.
It has haste and can give other allies haste.
Yeah, what do you think of that card?
Pretty scary, but it's just like the same type of thing I talked about last week, where it's just kind of slow and clunky. I like that your deck's pretty low to the ground here. I see you have the Doc Arlok plus airbending kind of combo.
So I became kind of obsessed with this combo. It's basically Appa, Steadfast Guardian, which is 2WW 3/4 flying flash, and when it enters battlefield, you can airbend any number of other permanents you control. And then also when you cast something from exile, you make a 1/1. And Doc Orlok, which is a card from Outlaws of Thunder Junction, is the green blue 2/3 where it says spells you cast from your graveyard or from exile cost 2 less to cast. So when you flip your or exile your own stuff with Appa, they all cost 0 mana, and then all you have to do is have another ETB airbend card like Aang or Airbender Ascension, and you basically just get to loop ETBs infinitely. So the reason it's in this deck is I'm not sure it should be, but I literally had Aang, Appa, and Airbender Ascension anyways, and I was like, well, might as well just throw in a couple of this guy. Cool. Yeah.
You need specifically like the Appa involved to net something, right? I mean, I guess you could have something else, but.
You need the Appa. Yeah, mostly you need the Appa or a lot of the other stuff. But yeah, you have Doc, Warlock, Appa. The cool thing is you can flash an Appa and then untap and play Doc and do it. This deck can use South Pole Voyager to get infinite life with that combo. If you have Appa, you get infinite 1/1s too. So that's about all you can do in this deck exactly. But it seems decent.
Yeah.
I guess you could blink Earth King's Lieutenant, make your guys infinitely big also.
I saw an interesting... some of the games I saw had Avatar's Wrath involved, which neither of us talked about last week and I wanted to bring up. I don't know if that was, you know, a card we missed necessarily when we're only doing a top 10, but it's 2WW sorcery. Choose up to one target creature, then airbend all other creatures. And then until your next turn, your opponents can't cast spells from anywhere other than their hands, and then exile Avatar's Wrath. It reminds me a lot of, like, Tragic Arrogance, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is a card, like, it's not a card a dedicated control deck's going to play, but if you're playing, like, a mid-range war, where you're both just playing through the board a lot, it was pretty impressive to me just to be able to, like, play this card that just effectively bounced your opponent's entire board, and like it's like it reflector mages your opponent's entire board, you know, like
right. Mm-hmm. And then you also, if your deck is built around ETBs,
yeah, you can get some value there. A little bit and keep something in play and attack with it, and they can't like maybe play a ball. And you know, in those types of board stall games too, I think by the time you cast this, your opponent's just like going to be top decking, you know.
Right.
So you know, the spot where they like can't cast the cards that get bounced next turn might mean they just have nothing to cast at all.
Yeah. I did throw one of those in the sideboard of this other deck that I built. I built three of these like Doc Orlok combo style decks. The other one I had an idea for was the one that's on the screen currently. This is like a blue-white flash version.
Yeah, that's cool.
That uses Aang and Aven Interrupter, and of course Appa has flash as well. I've got No More Lies. And the idea of here is just to kind of play a fair flash game, and then at some point you could flash an Appa and then untap and play Doc and go off. It's not clear to me what the best, you know, things to blink are. I put one, so I've got Starfield Shepherd in this deck in small numbers just to get some planes. That's like kind of an okay card to airbend.
Jim Davis had a deck with Airbender Ascension that I thought was lacking things to blink, but also some cool things he was doing. He would go like turn two Voice of Victory into Airbender Ascension, bounce your thing, attack, make 2/1/1s, get two counters on my Ascension.
Well, that's pretty nice.
Yeah. That was a pretty nice play pattern.
Yeah, I could see fitting Voice of Victory.
Yeah, it's a weird balance of like token generating things are kind of nice for getting the Ascension online really fast. Mm-hmm. Also, something I didn't consider when we talked about is when you draw like a second Ascension, the first Ascension is going to like help you get the first one online. Or sorry, the second one online.
Yeah.
Just because you're blinking something, especially if you blink something that makes tokens. Sometimes you can just draw a new one and it's like online on your next turn already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I definitely think there's something here. I have no idea how it's supposed to be built, as evident that I built three different versions of the deck. Like Quantum Riddler is kind of interesting to play here because you could, it's not terrible to, well, first of all, when you have Doc Ock, Quantum Riddler costs two less while it's in exile. And then it's not terrible to just on turn four play Riddler and then warp it with Airbender Ascension.
I'm thinking about how like I want to play the Ascension and I want to play Riddler, and like what colors can I play to help bridge that, because unfortunately Bant just only has one Shockland.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess Esper comes to mind because it at least has two Shocklands, but
okay. I guess for today I was stuck on Doc Ock or Doc Orlok.
Yeah, I wonder what's in black that you could blink. There's probably some, you know, in a deck like this you only need to find like the best thing, and if it's good enough then that can totally be worth just splashing for it.
Right, for sure.
Because you're really just looking for like best in slot things to either blink or get the counters rolling on that card, things like that.
Yeah, one other thing that's good to blink is Outcaster Trailblazer. So we've got this other deck.
Yeah, that's kind of the part of a another deck that I haven't really been seeing do too well, but people like to play, which is the Teemer Battlecrier combo deck.
Yeah, I've lost that deck pretty badly.
Yeah, which I see now they're playing Doc Orlok, which doesn't make any sense to me, but...
Well, they use it to plot, like, their Trailblazers and their
Rhino, they play Railway Brawler now, it looks like, yeah.
So yeah, obviously, if you do this loop with Outcaster Trailblazer, you get infinite mana, so that's pretty nice. And then if you blink something like Quantum Riddler also, or in this case I have the Earth King in this deck that makes 4/4 tokens when it ETBs, then you get to draw cards too. Well, I also threw Badrimal Cup in this deck. He's a little awkward because he only makes green mana, so I've also got Gene Pollinator to help with the Bant. The Bant mana is kind of awkward. I mean, obviously I'm kind of making it work here with like Starting Town and Multiversal Passage and Breeding Pool. I'm a little worried that's going to be a lot of damage.
Yeah.
So just some ideas for those of you who are just listening. Also, this deck has the Sariyema to tutor for the Earth King or Doc Ock. Basically, you're like combo pieces. Appa obviously is legendary also. And then I've got a couple Hylias to go with these cheap creatures to maybe trigger and then maybe also gain infinite life. Fair warning, I've not played any games with these decks, so these are strictly for brainstorming, I would say.
Yeah.
Let's see. When you messaged me earlier, you were saying that control decks seem to be doing pretty good after rotation, but before Avatar.
At least people want to play them, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, they were decently positioned, and then, you know, the best deck got banned, so it's not crazy.
And there's obviously, like, a lot of stuff going on, and I do think that, you know, Hydroid Krasis was really dominant in Standard, and Standard has kind of evolved past that, maybe, but I think Wan Shi Tong, like, will probably be pretty good in Standard. But it is legendary, and the games where it's going to be good might happen less often. So I do think it's not going to be like the four of the Hydroid Krasis was. Notably, too, if you just make that comparison, obviously it doesn't gain life, but it has Flash and Vigilance. It's also one bigger, and one bigger is probably like the biggest, most important part of that that might actually make it considerably like a stronger card than Hydroid Krasis, potentially.
Yeah, I guess I kind of think of the Flash as pretty important. The Vigilance and the like extra point is maybe just scaling with power creep, hopefully. But,
like, yeah, I guess, you know, Hydroid Krasis for two is pretty bad. You know, like a 2/2 flying, draw a card, gain one life. It was not what people wanted to play the card for. But a 4-mana 3/3 flying Flash Vigilance draw a card is kind of the starting point for this card in Standard, at least, because, you know, you're not going to flash this in response to someone searching their library pretty much ever.
Right.
But that's kind of a much better baseline in my mind, and it really only gets better from there.
Yeah, totally. So I took my blue-white control deck from last format and just threw in some wands. I even threw in a couple Aangs, because even though the creature doesn't fit super well in this sort of deck, I think it might be a versatile enough card that you might play a couple in a blue-white control deck.
Yeah, or sideboard him.
Yeah, that too, maybe.
Just to, like, play to the board versus a small creature deck a little bit better.
Right.
But also being, like, creatures, a threatening thing in the mirror, yeah.
And just having, like, a tempo card.
I always view that type of thing, I guess, is, like, making life harder for, like, people who post boards where, like, you don't want to play this main deck because it's just a little too bad into your opponent's removal.
Mm-hmm.
But then post-board, when your opponent's just, like, not going to have the removal in their deck, it does its annoying thing and also can, like, pressure planeswalkers that your opponent might only have in their sideboard because you're a control deck or things like that.
Yeah. Once you are already committing to playing Wan Shi Tong, you're committing to some creatures. Which is why I decided to start with them in the main deck, but I agree with your points also. So, yeah, just pretty boring, basic blue-white control. It's funny, I thought about cutting Ultima and going all Day of Judgments now that Cauldron is banned, and then I realized, I mean, you could tell me if I'm correct or not here, but I think Ultima works well against Earthbending.
It does work well against Earthbending. It also works well against Enduring Curiosity.
Yeah, there's definitely the Endurings, but I guess I wasn't 100% sure what is why I asked with a question mark. But yeah, so basically, now that you confirm it, if your opponent has Badgermole Cub, which I assume is going to be a popular card, and you Ultima, instead of them getting their land back because it's a trigger, it's just going to be destroyed.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. It is interesting, like, you know, Earthbending is not completely safe. I played a draft game today where my opponent went tall with Earthbending and had, like, a 7-7. And I had this Lesson that's, like, a 5-mana blue instance that tucks it, and you get a clue.
No.
So I put their lands back into their deck, and they don't get their lands back, and it's kind of a huge blowout.
Yeah, bounce or lockdown can stop it.
Yeah, there's like a dozen untap aura in Avatar as well, which is kind of, it only costs one. It doesn't tap it on ETB, so that's why it's like kind of awkward. But it does have Waterbend 5 to shuffle it back into its owner's library, so I think it's a playable card. And you just get in these spots your opponent Earthbends on like turn 2 or 3 on a tap land because they just had to spend all their mana. And you just like pay 1 mana to lock down their land. And you don't even have to shuffle it back in. It's kind of like brutal.
Yeah, for sure. Especially unlimited. So you have to be a little careful with Earthbending. Before we move on from this blue-white control deck, I also have one Spirit Water Revival as a new card. The purpose with this is just failsafe. It's a divination. And otherwise, you can use it as, like, a pseudo-win condition if you run out of win conditions, or, you know, more likely in a control mirror or extremely grindy matchup, you can shuffle your library back in at some point. It'll cost a lot of mana, but maybe you can set it up with Restless Anchorage map tokens or Fountain Port treasure tokens to do the waterbending. Let's see. one more idea I had that I wanted to build around. I did not complete the deck. What do you think about this shell of cards?
It's kind of interesting to me that you have the blue cards, I guess, because it could be a shell just with the green ones.
Yeah, so Badgermal Cub obviously is a strong card. I want to test around that. And then Spirit Water Revival, I am interested in to see if you can make it work as trying to play the Waterbend cost as much as possible. So some cards I thought of that were good with it: Spyglass Siren, Sentinel of the Nameless City, and then of course just mana creatures. It's funny, I put this together and I was like, okay, what's my top end gonna be? And then I was like, I guess I have no idea. So
yeah, more card draw, Riddler.
Make a bunch of mana and then shuffle your deck in and then just draw cards that make all they do is make more mana.
Yeah,
draw more cards. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, the Enduring Vitality thing is interesting too, because that's a pretty strong card. And you know, last like July I brought up that I was playing the Otters deck in Standard, and that's still kind of there.
Ooh,
I mean, it's pretty much all there.
Yeah, are there any new cards that would fit there?
Well, from Avatar, that's tough to say. I mean, that deck's not forced into playing red either. Obviously, the like make X red rats is like a Splinter Twin type combo that it has, but it can definitely play like a little more of a value deck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like if you played Jeskai Ascendancy, where you could go like all in on that card in full combo, but there also just ended up being some fair Jeskai Ascendancy decks.
Right.
It's kind of the same thing. I'm not exactly sure if there's anything like brand new. I did think it was funny that deck I saw recently had Riddler, which was in the card yet the last time we talked about that deck, which seems like it's going to just be pretty normal for a lot of blue decks. Trying to look at some of the waterbending things. I guess the blue-white Flash Aang. I saw a different waterbending card, which I want to bring up for a different topic. It can be this episode. It's about Standard still, just like a different category of decks. But yeah, that deck, I guess its position in the metagame to me is like also kind of not good against aggro. I think it's pretty good against Dimir and Control, though, is kind of the expectation. But it's just also not that good at defending itself. I mean, it can be customized a lot of different ways, but as is, you're just like a really value-heavy deck that mostly only has Torch the Tower to like defend itself main deck.
Right, and then it's got like a combo finish, but the combo isn't particularly fast.
Yeah, it's not fast. It's with cards that are like all really annoying for control decks, but all really embarrassing for aggro decks. Like, you know, make X11 rats with haste is like actually pretty good against a control deck, things like that.
Mm-hmm. I could certainly imagine this format not being an aggro dominant format, but right out of the gates, it's pretty common for formats to, well, you have to be prepared for the aggro decks, because the simplest decks to build in this format right now probably are going to be like blue black, mono red, I imagine.
Yeah, probably more. I'm seeing leyline red.
Leyline red, there you go. Mono green with Badgermal Cub, green blue with aggro, you know, so those decks all look really strong. Mono red, you think the leyline strategy is going to be the best for that one?
Yeah, honestly, I thought Screaming Nemesis was a pretty like key part of the
kind other
of
version.
Creature version. I see some lists, but these are more looking like big red to me. I see, you know, the Noble Hellkites and the Osier Oxeneals and 25 lands. You know, you could play, if especially with Lorwyn, once the Shocklands come out, Sunspine Lynx is still probably going to be like looming over the format a little bit. So I don't want to like
count still that out. That card, yeah.
But like honestly, that would be more my expectation. Like if I wanted to play like a red deck preying on the format, I'd probably want to be playing 24 or 25 lands and like main decking the Lynxes.
And that's, you know, that's probably not quite a leyline deck, right? It's pretty different.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The leyline deck is different. That's like a very go under people deck. That's for punishing people for not playing removal. Whereas I guess like the Sunspine Lynx idea would be, if the format kind of starts evolving into this three color format because the mana is so good, then I think a Sunspine Lynx deck could certainly just pop up and kind of make people really consider if that's worth doing, playing three colors.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because when I was building decks, it still feels like the mana's kind of bad in a way.
Yeah, I really think it's very polarized lands.
Yeah, I think once we get those, it gets quite a bit better.
But like Temur and Sol, you know, some of them were the mana bases you were looking at specifically. I think like Temur and Sultai are good examples of like decks that can have pretty good mana. Notably, those are like the two green three color combos that are kind of allowed to happen right now. And green's going to usually have something in the deck, maybe just a single four of, that's helping you fix your mana too.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was looking back on old standard decks a while ago and noticing that the mana wasn't so great a lot of the time in a lot of years. That being said, it feels bad now, I think, because the power level is so high now that we've got a three-year standard, that the mana requirements are just a lot stricter. Like, most decks can't really play as many tap lands as a big problem. So things that old standard decks used to rely on, like tapped three-color lands, we have those. I mean, we don't have the cycling ones with the land types, but we do have just three-color lands, and those aren't even playable. So it'll be interesting to see what happens when we finally do get to Lorwyn and we get more shock lands. But until then, yeah, really unbalanced mana.
Yeah, it's pretty weird. I mean, yeah, I guess Temur and Sultai, big mana decks too. The Shared Roots, the Rampant Growth, is like a tool they have access to make their mana probably pretty playable or reasonable. I imagine those types of decks could probably build their mana in a way where I think they could play like whatever they want.
I thought about throwing Shared Roots into Blue-White Control.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound too crazy.
No,
it doesn't. Splash it. They don't have a ton great to do early. And with Wan Chi Tong being a big X spell that draws cards.
Yeah, those cards could go well together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, you mentioned that. Obviously, there's a lot of decent white cards, but I imagine you could probably build something that looks kind of similar within Sultai. If you want to use Deadly Cover-Up, works against Enduring Curiosity, at least, still.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
I guess, what's the peel of the white? No More Lies and Get
No More
Lost?
Lies. Yeah, you probably would want to do the dragon-type stuff if you were Sultai, but maybe that's too clunky.
Yeah, I did like that stuff for a while, but it's better now.
Here. In this set, there wasn't really any notable counterspell.
No.
I guess on the topic of Sultai as a color combo, you know, there's that Superior Spider-Man deck, which still could do kind of whatever it wants. I think I don't really like the way they're built right now. They seem really, like, top-heavy. And sometimes even still play like Terror of the Peaks to try to like one-shot their opponent. And I would think that like you play your 8-drop demons to do your combo, but then like I would just look to play like things like Meringue River Regent and Overlord the Balemurk as like maybe backup reanimation targets for Superior Spider-Man. And try to play kind of like the best little value creatures you can. I'm sure it's like a deck that, because people like to complain about this type of thing, like you probably won't win much if you don't find the card Superior Spider-Man. And for the most part, you're definitely trying to do your bringer combo. But I think that like if your opponent is being overly disruptive, then your deck just kind of playing out in a normal way can be really punishing as someone who just plays a lot of decks, I guess, that are kind of like this. Just having your creatures have power and toughness and attack and block. But then I guess this deck, the black-green kind of Earthbend Bloodghast deck I'd mentioned, and then I saw another thing where people were playing with this card, Foggy Swamp Visions.
Oh, right.
Which is one black-black sorcery. As an additional cost to cast a spell, Waterbend X. Exile X target creature cards from your graveyards. For each creature card exiled this way, create a token that's a copy of it. At the beginning of your next end step, sacrifice those tokens. And these decks were just like Badger Mole Cub, go wide, kind of get permanents in play to help you waterbend X fast while also milling yourself type decks, like Town Greeter. It's like the perfect type of card. And just bringing back like Crater Hoof and other things.
Oh, Crater Hoof.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay, smart.
And, you know, Badger Mole Cup and Mana Dorks is a lot of mana really fast, too. So I don't think totally. Like 8/8 is, like, out of the question for that deck to have.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my point is, you know, I think even before the Cauldron deck was dominant, that Graveyard Hate was, like, pretty minor in Standard for a while. And if it was played, it was kind of specifically targeting Omniscience, where, like, you were just, like, Ghost Vacuum was the type of card you'd want. But I do think we might be seeing that the graveyard decks that people look to play right now might require things more like Rest in Peace or, you know, something a bit more heavy duty that's, like, hitting an entire graveyard at the same time.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. I mean, I've kind of liked Lantern for a while.
It's a little bit of Ghost both, Vacuum, yeah.
Or a little, at least a mix.
Yeah.
Lantern, maybe if you don't have access to white, certainly, instead of just blindly throwing Ghost Vacuum in your sideboard, probably Lantern is at least a little bit better in most of these situations, because if you have to, you know, blow it for to hit their whole graveyard, that's much better.
It's always so tough, because when Ghost Vacuum's good, it's, like, really good, because it's a win con.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's really nice that it's, like, not just, like, a completely dead card. It's always surprising to me the amount of games I've won with Ghost Vacuum. You know, I used to board it against, I guess, like, the Jeskai Oculus deck before it used to be the Cauldron deck, was an example where it's just, like, I'd draw my Ghost Vacuum against them as Omniscience, a deck that, like, doesn't really win with combat damage ever, and just, mm-hmm. like, Ghost Vacuum out of the game, end up with a bunch, you know, Oculus, Delirium, FOMO, and other things in play at some point in the game, and just kill them with their own deck.
Yeah, that is pretty sweet when that happens. Probably why most people play that card more, to be honest. I mean, the Lantern, you know, if it's ever dead, can cycle. And one thing I like to do in white decks that also have Rest in Peace is sometimes, unless you really need Rest in Peace in the format, sometimes you don't want to overload on it, and you could play a mix in your sideboard. That way you don't have these games where you board in three Rest in Peace and it's not super key. Like, if it doesn't completely shut your opponent's deck down and you draw multiple of them, that can be a problem. Whereas if you draw a Rest in Peace and a Lantern, you could cycle the Lantern.
Yeah, I agree. I think I don't know if I would ever register three Rest in Pieces, but you'd have to give me a really extreme context, you know, like,
yeah,
a card that I think any deck that you think Rest in Peace is good against in any format is, like, gonna sideboard in a way that if you draw two Rest in Pieces, they're gonna maybe be fist bumping, you know, like, that's just pretty normal nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Just, it's tough to just spend four mana to, like, and be down a card. There's certainly some exceptions, and I guess some decks just might be particularly good at, like, rummaging away their Rest in Pieces or things like that. There was also an era, I remember, at PT Aetherdrift, when we were playing the Esper Pixie deck, we'd have these Rest in Pieces come in and out of our sideboard, and they're really funny, because it was, like, what decks do you even want Rest in Peace against? And we were like, oh, like, they're not really popular at all, but they're just, like, these Talarian Terror decks or maybe something like that. There's just, like, there was this category of decks that could never beat Rest in Peace, which is, like, still a thing that I guess is going to happen, where, like, some people do go really far all in and just kind of play like Rest in Peace doesn't exist.
Right.
Which is kind of fair in my mind, but it does mean that sometimes you can build your sideboard, I guess, in a way that for, you know, the majority of the metagame, maybe you only need 13 cards in your sideboard and you can slot in a couple Rest in Peace just because it's such, like, a high win rate card when it is good. But I do think going overboard and, you know, I'm just saying if graveyard decks become extremely popular, that's usually because they're pretty resilient to graveyard hate to some extent.
Especially in Standard, right?
Yeah. I mean, even, you know, the Cauldron deck was technically a graveyard deck, but I think people have learned by now that, you know, Rest in Peace was not exactly something you want against them.
Mm-hmm.
This card, you know, you're pulling up. Yeah.
I was thinking something we could do is talk about some of the cards that we thought were good in the set that didn't really make our top 10.
Yeah, definitely.
The Rise of Sozin is a card that I think could be appealing in some spots. Certainly, I wasn't brave enough to put it on my top 10 because it's really expensive, but this is 4 black-black, one of the Enchantment Sagas. Chapter 1, Destroy All Creatures. Chapter 2, choose a card name. Search target opponent's graveyard hand and library for up to 4 of the cards of that name and exile them. So a little extraction effect, everybody's favorite. And then it flips into a 5/5 menace with firebending 3. And whenever it deals combat damage to a player, so it has to connect, you may pay X. When you do, put any number of target creature cards with total mana value X or less from that player's graveyard onto the battlefield under control. Of course, the joke there is that you can use the firebending 3 to pay with that. So mostly it's just a wrath that comes with a delayed win condition. What do you think of this card?
Yeah, costing 6 for a wrath, I think, is definitely a tall ask. I think is my big concern. You know, Deadly Cover-Up is also like kind of the go-to black wrath right now, which does the surgical thing better than this, but I know that's not like ideal. But when you are playing this type of deck, it is relevant, I guess. You know, it's not unwelcome to be able to do this surgical effect.
Yeah, the surgical can come up, actually, I think, in matches, especially if it's kind of free like this.
On Deadly Cover-Up, the fact that it hits, like, Enduring Curiosity or anything like that is a huge deal. But,
yeah,
just because you prevent that right away from happening to you.
The one thing I like about this card is it's a way to fit win conditions in your deck without, you know, having to just play out, dedicate a slot to it. Or at least this way your win condition kind of protects you. That being said, it is just a 5/5 creature on the other side, so maybe that's not even a good enough win condition.
Yeah. I mean, it's not going to be a solo win condition, but like when Sunfall was legal, I really respected how good it is to have a sweeper that comes with a body.
Yeah, that's a good point. And Sunfall exiled and it cost one less mana, so that's why it was all over the place. But... you know.
No, I think Sunfall is like one of the best sweepers ever, on a side note. But
yeah, totally. This card was also interesting, I thought. Obsessive Pursuit. This is kind of an odd one. One in a black enchantment. When this enchantment enters and at the beginning of your upkeep, you lose one life and create a clue token. And whenever you attack, put X +1/+1 counters on target attacking creature, where X is the number of permanents you've sacrificed this turn. If X is 3 or greater, that creature gains lifelink until end of turn.
Yeah, you definitely want to be doing something else with the clue tokens.
Yeah. Very slow card. I mean, you could waterbend with them. There's not a ton of great waterbending things.
Yeah, I guess specifically I'd be looking for like cards that said sacrifice some artifacts, do something good. That would be like my ideal situation here. And then obviously when the game goes really long, you can use the clue tokens. I actually have this card in my deck at pre-release in a deck that really cared about sacrificing permanents.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, still, it's like, in Limited, I know it's a bit more extreme, but like, you could not play this card on turn 2 in Limited. Like, I think you're a huge favorite.
Sure.
It's more like you pretend this card is like a card that you play out as the last card in your hand and then start getting your value from it.
Yeah. In Constructed, you could sort of build around the lose a life per turn, though, where you could, you know, maybe play card drawing to get this lifelink to trigger, or not card drawing, I'm sorry, a sacrifice deck to get this lifelink to trigger, other things of that sort.
Yeah, I mean, the Umbral Caller Zealot can sack artifacts too, you know, so like it could be a card advantage.
That's an example of something. It's certainly just for one, you know, one on a black enchantment. It's got like this sort of Bitter Blossom vibe where it just creates a ton of value over the game. Very slow, obviously.
Yeah. One of the cards that was near the top of my list was Azula, Cunning Usurper.
Is this the multicolored one? Azula. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, 2BB, 4/4, legendary creature, firebending 2. When Azula enters, target opponent exiles a non-token creature they control, then they exile a non-land card from their graveyard. During your turn, you may cast cards exiled with Azula, and you may cast them as though they had flash. Mana of any type can be spent to cast those spells. Point being, you can firebending out the spells. There was Shieldred in March of the Machine. Notably, the Shieldred that's name is just Shieldred.
Mm-hmm.
Had a similar ETB to this, and could flip into a Saga. But, you know, I think this card, you know, if there's kind of a mid-range battle going on, and people are mostly playing just kind of straight up decent creatures, this could certainly kind of slot in, because the edict is, it's really going to scale with how good the edict is. But being like a 4/4 that edicts your opponent's creature and draws 2 spells, and if they don't kill it, they're going to probably cast both of those spells next turn, it is pretty unique.
Yeah, it strikes me as better than the old Shieldred, and that card was almost good enough.
Yeah, exactly. This is like a card that if people play, it's going to be like one or two copies or in their sideboard or things, I think. But
yeah, it's interesting because at the moment, I think we're probably shaping up to have a really go wide format.
Yeah. But
if it were to be a way where people were just playing big haymakers, this could certainly be good. It's a little, you know, your opponent gets choice what they sacrifice. They get choice out of the graveyard.
It's funny, they're allowed to exile an Earthbended land, and then you can't play the land.
Oh.
Which
that
is,
sucks.
Yeah.
In the art, she's wearing Earthbending garb. Come on. What's going on? She can't fix that? That's funny. Yeah, the flash thing, how much does that matter? I guess it works with the firebending.
It's just to
attack the next turn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, and it's only during your turn that they have flash. I see.
Yeah.
I was thinking, like, well, if you could play on your opponent's turn, that actually kind of matters. But yeah, interesting card. There's that, I don't know if it's similar. There's that Gonti-esque card from Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I guess that doesn't make them sack something, but you,
it's a little
you get
smaller
more selection there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another card I had, really boring, just Aang's Iceberg.
Yeah, I thought about putting this one in a couple of my decks today. I'm not sure if it's good enough. It's a little hard for me to tell.
Certainly, it's not going to be like a 4 of staple, but
no.
If you're looking for a catch-all that can just answer anything that's already in play, I'm sure like a flash, you know, Oblivion Ring is not completely unwelcome. The Waterbend Sack, this enchantment, is kind of useless.
It kind of confuses me. I don't
understand.
You're
probably only
going to
do it if
your
opponent tries to kill it. It must just be a flavor thing, right? Because Katara gets Aang out of his iceberg.
Oh, sure. I don't know why the bonus is Scry too, but sure. Yeah, this is basically just literally Flash Oblivion Ring. It's a better rate than anything we've gotten in a long time for these effects. But that being said, it really feels like 3 mana answers are too slow nowadays, even for standard.
Yeah. Also, just a huge shame that, like, still doesn't work against Kaido, at least with Flash. You still have to untap and wait, you know?
Yeah, untap and wait, and then I guess against that deck, they're not really going to free Kaido from the iceberg, but there's plenty of decks that can, you know, so it's it's not even clear that you'd want this over Get Lost in your white deck.
I guess, like, if you know you're going to untap and cast Ultima or something, and you had a creature underneath this, you'd sack it to Scry too, but
sure. Yeah, pretty narrow. Yeah, I mean, I thought about it, especially in that one deck where I had the flash style deck where I had, and I think it might have actually had one in the deck where I had Aang and Aven Interrupter. So obviously, you're just leaving 3 mana up instant speed a lot.
Yeah. Well, you know, this card actually, there is one more application to it, I guess.
Okay.
Maybe in your type of creature-y white mid-range decks, it doesn't say exile something an opponent controls.
Sure.
So, you know, you could play this as a catch-all removal spell in your white mid-range deck that has a lot of creatures. But if your opponent goes to, like, kill one of your creatures, you could just flash this in, exile it, maybe re-get an ETB by waterbending it, and, you know, that type of deck. At least my experience in Limited so far is that, like, waterbend, you know, is... it's really powerful, I guess. And they didn't print very many cards that you can do anything broken with, I'm sure, because it would be really easy to do so. But it's really easy to fuel Waterbend, even in Limited. So,
yeah, so I guess like maybe if you have a white midrange deck and you're up against a more controlling deck, maybe if they cast a Wrath against you and you've had this thing, this stupid removal spell in your hand all game, you could at least exile your guy and then end of turn Waterbend
to
get out of it.
In any context, you could just use it in response to a spot removal spell on your own thing and immediately waterbend it, maybe, back into play.
Yeah, so that's interesting. That's not so bad.
I still wouldn't want to put 4 in my deck, but, you know,
if
I was a white mid-range deck that was just like, I really want some catch-alls in my sideboard, I'd put 1 or 2 of these in there, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Zhao the Moonslayer, I guess, was another one on my list.
Okay, what's that one do?
So 1 in a red, 2/2 menace, legendary creature, non-basic lands, enter tapped, pay 7 mana, put a conqueror counter on Zhao, as long as Zhao has a Conqueror counter on him, non-basic lands are mountains. So it's a Blood Moon, eventually.
Blood Moon?
I don't think the Blood Moon part of this card or paying 7 mana is what I'm interested at all, though it's a Firebending payoff, which is kind of cute. But no, I mean, I guess in this hypothetical 3-color decks are rampant, and I'm playing Sunspine Links mono-red, this card might go right in there too, you know? Just a 2-2 menace for 2 that says your non-basic lands enter tapped if your deck is all basic lands. It's kind of what a red kind of aggro stompy deck is looking for.
Yeah, it's kind of awkward that this is legendary, right?
Yeah, you probably can't.
For a 2-drop, you have to just play 2 of them or whatever?
Yeah, I guess that's what's funny to me is I think when I first thought about it, it was like, oh, like I'm not going to just like build a mono-red deck just to play 1 or 2 of this card. But I guess if you're already building a mono-red deck to play 4 Sunspine Links, then maybe this can work out.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure this is exactly why the mana activated ability on this is 7. But it is interesting, all the red creatures that have activated abilities, because they can be paid with firebending.
Yep.
Speaking of which,
it's 7 because there is like a potential that it wins the game, right? Like in standard.
Yeah, like, totally. It's both. From what I could tell online, this card was decently hyped, and neither of us had it on our top 10. What do you think about Firebending Student? This is 1 in a red, 1/2 with prowess, and it has Firebending X.
Yeah, there's some power. Scary stuff you can do, I guess, notably like Wild Ride this and attack and get a bunch of mana and keep pumping it. Or, you know, there's a 1 in a red instant double target creature's power and it has flashback for 6, which is very uniquely kind of perfect with this.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like the only way you'd play it and flashback in the same turn is if you had this card.
Yeah.
But I guess I thought anything cool you could do with this card sounded worse than what you could do with Slickshot Showoff.
Right.
Kind of my shortcut there. But, you know, that card might... That doesn't mean this card will always be bad. And, you know, the Showoff will rotate one day. And this card and Wild Ride will still be legal and standard together. And maybe they'll come together.
Are you interested in building a deck with both?
No, I think those decks are just always too clunky. I think that Slickshot Showoff decks don't even want like 4 more 2-mana creatures in their deck for the most part. And then, you know, another...
too clunky. The 2-drops are too clunky for standard, prowess, Jacob.
Another prowess pump spell my thing card that people want is Emberheart Challenger too, which is really good, so...
Yeah.
And, you know, this doesn't have haste by itself, and both the ones I just said do. It's kind of a huge deal to me. You know, you have all these dreams of what you can do with this card, but, like, a bunch of games you play with this, you're just going to be hoping you untap with it.
So, funny story, before I saw the spoiler, I was listening to MTG Goldfish podcast, and they were talking about this. And for some reason in my mind while they were talking about this, it was 1 red, because they're excited about it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's a red, it's a 1-mana 1/2. With prowess and does this. And I was like, this card's insane. This has got to be in my top 10. And then I actually looked at the spoiler and I was like, oh, it's 2-mana. That's so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. It is a cool card, though.
Yeah, you know, there was also another card in Standard that we never talked about or I'd noticed that I guess you can do very similar things with, which is Spider-Man 2099.
Right.
Which you can't cast on the first returns of the game, but it is like a 2/3 double strike that like flings itself. Or if you cast this, no, it says like at the beginning of your end step, if you cast a spell from exile this turn, it does damage equals its power to any target. And like you can just do similar types of combos with that card where you set it all up and wild ride it.
Yeah. I meant to pull it up there. There it is. Spider-Man card, yeah. Back to black. What do you think of this My Scornful Striker?
Oh, I mean, it might see play.
It seems like it legendary. Would be a good sideboard card out of a black deck, maybe.
Black deck. There certainly could be times where,
like even if it's a really non-creature you know?
Deck. Yeah. It being symmetrical is tough.
That's true. If you're, like, a heavy black creature deck, though, and you board this against... Well, I guess they would. Yeah. I guess not. I don't know.
But yeah, if you were like a black mid-range deck and there was like combo and control decks, I could see playing this.
Yeah.
Or sideboarding it.
Mm-hmm. That's another card that I think the online chatter was excited about, and it wasn't particularly, but... Okay. Any other cards?
We talked about some. I mean, so Momo, I guess we can talk about, the rare one.
Okay.
Because if you just read this card, it sounds like it could be pretty good.
Yeah.
But there's, like, nothing to do on turn two with this.
I almost put it in a deck that had Aang and Appa, and then I realized it was only during your turn.
Yeah, exactly. I did start writing down cards, but I stopped pretty quick. Like, I went through the whole list and didn't bother really writing it down, I think, because I didn't find a single card that I was like, oh, that's really strong to do. Like, there was just nothing like that on turn two.
I mean, this card is really powerful, so it's the kind of thing that maybe try to keep in the back of your mind, because if they print a good flying three drop or some...
Yeah, and it has to be good enough not discounted, because you're not going to play four of this card, I imagine, unless you have a weird looter deck.
Right. But yeah, and then, of course, if you have it in all flyers, it gets pumped too. Yeah, so I do like that card.
But yeah, we've talked about some of the other ones, you know, the lesson type stuff. Earthen Ally is the ally one drop that gets +1/+0 for each color among allies you control. I guess I doubt this will really be a thing, but Leyline of the Guild Pact isn't standard if you have that.
Okay.
And you play this, so it's a 5/2 on the first turn.
It's building towards our Leyline deck. We don't have it yet, but if they print more cards that go in our Leyline deck. It's funny, when I was building the ally deck, there's not a ton of good one drops. Like, this guy's okay, but I didn't want to have four.
Yeah.
The best one is probably just the one mana common, where it's a 1/1.
It sacks to give something indestructible. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't see much else. I've seen some cool things, but not really what I thought would be that good. This card might be fine.
I have the Unagi of Koshi Island pulled up. 3 BBB 5/5 flash. Ward, waterbend 4. So kind of cool. It requires your opponent to waterbend, although, like you were saying, waterbend is actually kind of easy to pay for in a lot of ways. There's a lot of ways you can do it. But this card says, whenever an opponent draws their second card each turn, you draw two cards. What do you think about this card? Is it constructed playable in any sense?
5 is just so much to have this thing work, I guess. I played against it in draft with a deck that played into it and just got completely wrecked. But
yeah. This card's funny to me because I like the art. I like the design. I think it's really cool. I think there's maybe some cyber potential where you could side it in against someone who's drawing a lot of cards. But honestly, probably not
good enough. It's like, if you can cast this, you probably have Quantum Riddler in your own deck. And that's like the best card to put this, like, to play against.
Against.
I feel like. And also, yeah, it's not even that good.
Have all these blue five
because
drops.
They have a 4/6. Yeah, like.
Right. I also watched some of Jim Davis's videos. I watched his one on blue because I wanted to see what he put the best blue card as. And he put, I can't remember what card he put, but he didn't put this, obviously. But he thought this was better, going to be better in like a control deck than the Librarian, than the Wan Shi Tong. And I thought that was pretty funny. Kind of wanted to read for it a little bit. There is an era of well, I think the old fogey Magic players look at this card and it looks really cool, but
I'm pretty curious about the Librarian in Modern. I'm not a believer, I guess.
Okay. The whole reason I put it on number one on my list is because I thought it would be good in Modern and maybe even Legacy. We'll have to see. Maybe not.
Yeah, I made a joke today that you successfully flash it in response to your opponent's fetch land and they read it for the first time and they go, oh, that's really cool. Okay, I'll cast Flage.
And they kill it. Yeah, or they realize it's in your deck and they start playing around it. We'll see. I mean, I don't know. It seems like a good card.
Yeah, I'm also preparing for a large, you know, open decklist tournament too, where it's like, okay, like,
just I'll fetch it on my turn, and you're like, dang,
my deck doesn't have to really care about it. I do have a fetch land, so I'll keep that in mind. But
Amulet, sure, yeah. Okay, well, that ought to do it for today's episode, folks. Thanks everyone for watching. We will be back next week, probably still talking about Standard. Maybe we'll touch on Modern a little bit as well.
Yeah, I've played the RC, and then I'll be looking at Avatar Limited, just sealed especially for the qualifier weekend.
Right, maybe we need to do our sealed episode next week.
Yeah, we might have a couple weeks. I don't know if there's an arena open or something right away, but the qualifier weekend there's a couple weekends for. I guess really quick, when is Worlds is the 5th of December. So,
well, that's real soon, and that's going to be standard, I assume, right?
Yeah,
or at least partially.
So, yeah, standard and draft, avatar draft.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, more standard to him, folks. Thanks for watching. Again, you can find us over on patreon.com/StockUpPodcast. We really appreciate all of our patrons over there. It means a lot. You can watch us on YouTube or follow us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. So until next time. Okay, so there was an Arena Direct last weekend. Did you play in it at all?
No. I just did more cube drafts. I did not play in it.
Fun. It was Kamigawa Limited, and I got totally destroyed.
Yeah. I did not play Kamigawa Limited too much, though I did play an Arena Open when that set was out, and I made day two. It was probably, I think it was the first time I'd ever made day two of an Open, not that I'd tried really hard back then. And I remember this, not exactly what my pool was, but I remember the detail that I believe my day two pool, because it was sealed and not draft back then. Now
gotcha,
it is,
okay.
Things with drafts. My day two pool, I think, might have been the worst sealed pool I literally have ever gotten, which I know people love to complain about, but this was special because I did not have any mana fixing. And if I shelled out my deck in any potential two color combination with what I thought were playable cards, I could not hit 23.
Yeah, so that sounds pretty bad.
It was one of the most frustrating pool I've ever had, and I did not win with it.
I did have a lot of really terrible pools. I even had a couple good pools, and I still didn't win. I didn't quite grind it out like I have done for some Arena Directs, and maybe I should have, but I literally think I spent like $300 in buy-ins and didn't win anything.
Damn.
So, in case people think you've ever had a bad run in the Arena Open, I've had it worse, or at least as bad. And all the other Arena Opens, I think I went positive several hundred dollars.
Yeah. It's good to point out those runs. It reminds me, I mean, this was still a good victory for me, but I think I had mentioned when there was the Edge of Attorney's Collector Booster box.
Mm-hmm.
So I did win four boxes, and I won them on like the Friday that they came out. And then I played the rest of the weekend and did not win anything. And it was probably like similarly, like I spent $300 in a row after I had already won four boxes and won nothing, you know? Like, so it's just like.
Yeah, so it can be kind of rough. I had a seal pull. Speaking of bad seal pulls, I won't even talk about the pool, but I just, so many times during that draft or the day, and especially this pool, when I opened and saw the rares, because you know it has the channel lands in it. Sage and whatnot. I had four channel lands and a red march, which is like three of the marches are also unplayable.
Yeah.
And two are just 1/4 removal spells. I literally had two Besaju and then a blue one and a black one. And they're legendary too. So even I think I ended up playing green and I was just like, well, I'm not even going to play two Besaju.
Yeah.
So
that's brutal. This, last weekend, I did two Avatar pre-releases, and the first one, so they're seeded, which I don't like.
Yeah, they do that a lot nowadays.
Yeah, but like seeded for Tarkir, I didn't mind, but this is just like a one color pack that you get.
Oh,
and
so you drafted monocolor, or played monocolor?
So I picked. I didn't get to pick the first time. You could trade at both events I played. They're like, you know. You can't just pick whatever you want because then everybody might pick the same thing. But if your neighbors want to trade you, then sure, trade before you open them.
Okay.
And I got Firebending first, red, which I really didn't want, but I didn't try too hard to trade. And I ended up building a red-black deck that I really didn't like even before round one. And I was choosing to draw because I had a bunch of cheap red removal and I had like Corrupt Court Official and a Sweeper in my deck. Really boring deck. Really hated it. I think the Sweeper might have been my only rare, too. Ton of terrible rares in my pool. Then the next day, I got green, which I really wanted. So I have an entire pack that's basically mono green. It did come with a black pre-release promo. because the pre-release promos are completely random.
Okay.
And then I had 5 regular packs, and I just built an awesome black red deck. Out of 5 packs plus 1 bonus rare, I just had like an amazing, like, I feel like.
So is that a feel bad, or is that like, oh, I'm stoked about my black red deck?
Just kind of interesting to me that like I could have a full extra pack towards a red black deck and have a terrible red black deck, and then the next day have an amazing red black deck where I'm just down a pack and sealed, which.
Right. That's funny. I mean, that could definitely happen. Yeah.
It's like my favorite thing ever. It had 3 acts of treasons and like stuff to sack things too.
Perfect.
Yeah. Three of the same uncommon in 5 packs, you know?
It makes sense. My friend told me he drafted mono red at the pre-release, and I was like, oh.
Yeah, I lost to mono red today in draft. There is a slight mono color support in this format. Yeah.
Yeah. Monocolored. Yeah. I'm excited to play limited. Was just looking at constructed decks, but yeah. So, because